It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show. My name's Jet Lacy. I'm filling in for Ernie, give him a little morning off, and catch up on some other things. Anyway, I'm going to start off in the economy because I think it's the most important thing that we can be talking about right now. Because as I've said many times in conversations that I've had with people, that our money, the money that we have, the currency, is the way for any nation to say we're open for business. That we have a currency that we wish to trade with others in, and this is how we're, you know, really our first foot forward towards the world to declare ourselves as an entity, a nation. Well, what we're having right now is basically a dollar crisis, and I've done a lot of research on this stuff, and I can prove, I believe, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this is being done on purpose, the crash of the dollar, because our debt is so immense. And the amount of unfunded liabilities that we have, like Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security, that we can absolutely not pay our debt ever. There's just no possible way. And I know it's sort of a depressing thing to think about. But there's two ways that government can pay off that debt. One is either straight up default, you know, like you would do on your mortgage if you couldn't pay it. But that's really not an option. I mean, it is, but it isn't. And as far as the world is concerned, the other way to go about that is to debase the currency, which means to make it worth less. And so you pay in the long run, if according to the currency, you pay less off because the money is worth less. And that's what I believe that our government is doing at the behest of, you know, the people that control them, which I believe is the banking system. And all this can be tied right back to the large banks that are, you know, really have taken all of this money that they have basically forced us to print in order to save them. And they've used it to buy real assets at pennies on the dollar, which is, surprise, surprise, the exact same thing they did during the Great Depression. And how they get about doing this is through the Federal Reserve. And you hear a lot about the Federal Reserve in the news right now because the Federal Reserve was created in 1913 by the same groups of people. Well, they're ancestors, their children and grandchildren that created it then, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and, you know, these types of families, the DuPonts and the Morgans and the Warburgs. And these people are still in power today all over the world. And what they did was hijacked our currency. And from that point on, every single day since that day, every dollar that was printed had debt attached to it. So eventually, more and more and more, the more debt since 1913 that's accumulated, we are unable to pay it. And Ron Paul, as a personal hero of mine, and as well as many people around here, he... he's been championing against. He first put up the end the Fed bill in 1983. And it's now, after all these years, 26 years, getting some attention because the problem has gotten so profound. So what I'm going to do is play a clip from Ron Paul on CNN just today or this or yesterday morning, and then we'll further discuss it.
Get that? Pain being felt on Main Street. It's a mix that's hard to figure out for many Americans, given an unemployment rate of nearly 10%. According to the Wall Street Journal, the nation's top 23 banks and investment firms are poised to pay a record $140 billion, with a B, dollars in bonuses to their top executives. Now, many of those banks got bailout money. Some of them were able to pay it back, of course, leaving many to wonder if they're on a road to repeat their past mistakes. Joining me now from Clute, Texas, Representative Ron Paul of Texas and the author of End the Fed. Great to see you this morning.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
And Congressman, it just seemed like yesterday that we were talking about these firms on the brink of collapse. We poured a record amount of money, taxpayer money, into rescuing these firms in the form of that bailout. And now we're talking record profits. At the same time, we're not seeing that same wealth trickle out to Main Street. So what's going on?
Well, they take care of their own. There's a great deal of influence in Washington from Wall Street. And I think most people have known about it, but they're really coming to the understanding how it really works. If things are going well, when the bubble is being formed and the Fed makes easy credit, a lot of people make a lot of money. But that's doomed to fail. The bubble bursts. And rightfully, the thing to do then is to put people in jail if they committed fraud. And the people who are bankrupt, let them go bankrupt. Well, we didn't do that. Very little fraud was prosecuted. And the people who were supposed to go bankrupt got bailed out. Some went bankrupt. If they didn't have enough influence like Lehman Brothers, they went bankrupt. But somebody like Goldman Sachs, they're in a much better position. So they really got the bailout, and they're making tons of money.
Right. So I know you were against the system. Well, you were against the bailout in the first place. You were somebody who said you didn't think.
Absolutely.
You wanted the chips to fall where they may. And there were very convincing arguments on the opposite side that if we let this happen, this might be something from which we might not recover. Is this how you expected things to be a year later after the bailout, record profits for some of the top banks?
Well, I wouldn't have been able to predict and say what the profits would be, but no, I'm not surprised there's been a recovery. I think markets work this way. The stock market has recovered 50%, but a lot of times that has happened. That happened in the 1930s. So these same banks right now that are making tons of money and stashing it away, they're not out of the woods when the next downturn occurs. So I don't think it's over, but we have to wonder who's pulling the strings. You know, it is said that the Congress didn't have enough strings attached to the money they were giving away, but I think the strings go in the other directions. I think Wall Street has the strings on Washington, and they pull and do what they want, and that's where the corruption is. They control the monetary system. That's why it's so important that we find out how the Fed deals with banks secretly and how they deal with international finances and international central banks and other governments. That's where a lot of shenanigans are going on. They're hysterical if they think the Congress is going to find out exactly what they do behind the scenes and why some of these companies and some of these banks do so well while the average guy on Main Street get clobbered. But well, this is characteristic of the monetary system we have. This is not a surprise.
Right, but in the past you have been against regulation. You've been a free market person who, libertarian free market, who thinks that, really, you've got to let business go where it goes. In this situation, though, there were no strings attached, and as we understand it, there's a big lobbying effort underway to sort of water down any future regulations. Is this an example where maybe we do need some regulations? Because it doesn't look like, in some of these instances, big business is going to police itself.
Well, the regulations has to be on the cause of the problem. The cause of the problem is easy credit, so the regulation has to be on the Federal Reserve. Then if things get out of whack, there's still regulations. Not like there wouldn't be any regulations, but the regulations come in a different manner. They come through bankruptcy. We didn't permit the bankruptcies, and we did the bailing out. We perpetuated the problem by inflating the currency and bailing out the people that were benefiting. So fraud is a very significant problem that government should be involved in. You should deal with that. But the government's committing the fraud when they create this money and deal with their special interests. It's a fraudulent monetary system. They run a counterfeiting operation. So, yes, the regulations have to be there, but they can't allow you. We can't allow the central bank to create the bubble and say that it is unstable and we can prevent the problems by regulations. I think it's all twisted
around.
All right,
well, one of the questions,
the regulations have to come first by preventing. Pardon me?
Oh, I was just going to say one of the regulations would be that has been tossed around out there is whether or not we need to have some sort of cap on executive compensation or taxes on executive compensation to limit it. You were against taxing it when the whole AIG bonus debacle was happening.
You know, they go on the cap and stuff, and that's not as important as what we were talking about. I understand we have a caller, David in New Mexico. We're going to go to David, and we'll see what he has to say about this.
Well, hello there, Jet.
Good morning.
You know, what it really comes down to with all the complicated terminology is we're just being robbed.
Yeah.
And I'm really sick of it. It's got to stop. And as you were talking earlier about the how Social Security and Medicare and so forth are in trouble, bankrupt, unfunded, as you would say, it's not that we, the people, haven't paid into it. We've been paying into it 40, 50 or more years. And now we're being told that old people are too expensive and just have a duty to die, so they're not a burden on society. And it's only because the government has ripped off that money every year. And I remember many years ago they would say, oh, we'll pay that money back. We'll put it back. They never did. You know that.
Right. They, you know, it goes into the general fund and it gets used to fund the wars, basically. That's what
any damn thing they want, over and under the table. And these people should be prosecuted. They're not even bothering to read the bills.
Right.
It's malfeasance, and they should be tried, prosecuted to the full extent of the law and in a very public and humiliating manner.
Absolutely, David. Well, we got to go to the break. Do you have anything else you want to say? Do you want to hold over?
We can let it go for the moment.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your input. I couldn't agree with you more. We'll be right back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
On your feet or on your knees, it's Jet Lacy filling in for Ernest Hancock on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show. I think that goes back to what David in New Mexico was talking about. You know, at what point, I mean, I understand that there's a lot of people that are even senior citizens and they're on their waning years and they expected these things that they were promised because it's not that they were promised anything. They put money into it their entire lives. They've earned it and it's not going to be coming back to them. And that's part of the reason that I focus so much on the economy and my studies, because I think of my mom and my grandmother and my family that are possibly going to lose everything that they've worked for because of pure greed. And when that happens, when you start thinking about that in the most basic of terms, that these banksters are actually taking food out of the mouths of your family, and not just a little bit, they want all of it. And at what point do you have to stand up and say, listen, this is not going to work out? You know, on your feet or on your knees, you're either going to stand up for yourself or you're going to end up being a slave. And me, I'm not going to be a slave. And I'm not going to tolerate them taking food out of my family's mouths. So that's just the way it is right there. So let's really look at the facts regarding this economy. You know, when the collapse happened in 2007... they let Lehman Brothers go under. They allowed it. They've admitted it. Why? Because Lehman Brothers was Goldman Sachs' biggest competitor. You know, they were the ones that were Goldman's, you know, that were right there on the same forefront as Goldman's, but all of them went under, but they allowed certain ones that they felt like to go under. And then they kept the other ones, and then the other ones that they allowed to stay, they got all the bailout money, are they're making record profits. And You know, look at AIG got $180 billion. And, you know, $12 billion of it went to Goldman Sachs. $6 billion of it went to Deutsche Bank. And money went to the Royal Bank of Scotland and HSBC and all these banks that have nothing to do with the United States. You know, we were given money to foreign banks. I don't get it. I mean, what's $6 billion going to do for Deutsche Bank? But then again, what would $6 billion do in the pockets of Americans? I think there's a big difference there. So what we're talking about is, what, getting back to Ron Paul, we had a bubble that is created by this easy credit that the Federal Reserve was, you know, is allowing to occur. You know, the bubble gets inflated by easy credit, and what they do is they make massive amounts of money on this bubble, and they know that the bubble is going to inflate, and then they know it's going to burst. So what they end up doing is, by this easy credit, they loan out this money that they've made out of thin air, and so it doesn't really cost them anything. But knowing that the bubble is going to burst, they're making all this money off of them. And then when the bubble bursts, they have earned all this money. Well, the assets that they went along with to earn this money. And then when it bursts, they have all the reserves. And then when the bubble bursts, they make money on the way down by buying back the assets at pennies on the dollar, which is exactly why these banks are making record profits. What Goldman Sachs and Bank of America and all these companies did with their TARP money is to go out and buy assets, sometimes at 10 cents on the dollar. And so with them creating the money out of thin air and then getting real assets in return, yet we as taxpayers still owe the money back to the original banks and the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, because these same banks, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and the Rothschilds, they're the ones that own the Federal Reserve. Do you see how it's the biggest fraud and theft in the history of the United States? And then on top of that, we have different articles from different people. This one's from Global Research, which they have a show on immediately prior to ours on RBN here. And it's by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and he says that the rich have stolen the economy, which it goes, but he's just saying it in a different way, the way I believe. He's saying that Bloomberg is reporting that Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner's closest aides earned millions of dollars per year working for Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and other Wall Street firms. Yet none of these aides that were hired by Timothy Geithner have faced Senate confirmation. You know, the gifts of billions of dollars, taxpayers' money, provided these banks with an abundance of low-cost capital that boosted the bank's profits, while the taxpayers who provided the capital are increasingly unemployed and homeless. J.P. Morgan Chase alone announced that it earned $3.6 billion in the third quarter of this year on money that they borrowed at no interest out of your pockets. They are lining their pockets with our money, and they are engineering the dollar to go down with it so they can collectively make a world currency. We'll talk about that more when we get back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
They want to see us suffer here. This is Jet Lacy filling in for Ernest Hancock on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock show. We're getting back into the economy and talking about how we're actually getting screwed by these banksters. And it really is the largest theft in the history of mankind. I mean, we have guaranteed 23.8 $7 trillion, and that's of a few months ago, to these banks. And you know what? That's the main reason why it's so important that Dr. Paul's H.R. 1207 and the Sunshine Bill from, what's his name there, the Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont gets passed. We have never looked at the Federal Reserve's books since they were created in 1913. In a backdoor thing that happened in two nights before Christmas Eve when, you know, there wasn't even plane flight, you know, like on a regular basis. And they just snuck it in through Congress when half of the people were gone. And look where we are now. When we started, before the Federal Reserve started, you know, we were on the gold standard. And we were for a certain amount of time later. But they immediately started attaching debt to our money. And ever since then, Ron Paul always says that, and I've looked it up and it is true, what was worth a dollar in 1913, you know, what a dollar was worth was a dollar. And it is now worth 4 cents. So we've had a 96% decrease in the value of our currency. And that's a lot of that has to do with devaluing and decoupling our dollar from gold. Because gold has been the money of record for thousands and thousands of years. It's been the main exchange that's universal currency. If you want to talk about a world currency that they're talking about on the news, it's not going to be this basket of currency they're talking about SDR, specialized drawing rights from the IMF. All that is just paper that they state is worth something. Whereas gold is the world currency, and it is worth something. And if you believe, as I do, that our dollar is doomed, and there is, there's a lot of evidence out there that says that our dollar is doomed, and they're allowing it to happen, just like they did to Lehman Brothers. For one, they don't want to have to pay back the debt. For two, with the American dollar being the main dollar currency around the world, you know, it's allowed the American way of life, because we basically, our American way of life for the last 30 years has been bought on credit. It's all been built on a castle made of sand. And so I'd like to have another clip of Webster Tarpley, who is a really great historian and economist. He's really intelligent. And a lot of people say that, you know, all this stuff that's being brought about is the right wing and, and all these conservatives. Like, I'm a very conservative person. However, Webster feels the other way. He's very, very liberal. But there's a lot of people that just understand the reality of the situation that we're in. And Webster Tarpley is certainly one of them. I enjoy listening to what he has to say. He's brilliant. And he really understands what's going on with the world situation as it is now. So we're going to play this clip and then we'll talk about it a little bit more.
Hey there. Well, Barack Obama has been talking about the economy lately, and he seems to be pretty optimistic these days. He recently told a group of people in North Carolina that he thinks we're seeing the beginning of the end of the recession. He also defended his economic stimulus, saying, look, it's going to create jobs and get the economy back on its feet. But not everyone agrees with these assessments. Webster Tarpley is an economic historian, author, and radio host. He warns of a second wave of a world economic depression and says that there will be a dollar crisis due to hyperinflation. He also says that there is no automatic business cycle to keep the world economy from tanking. Well, he joins me today to discuss all of this. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So you recently wrote an article where you talked about hyperinflation and also monetary reform. You think that we're going to be seeing serious monetary reform soon. What is this going to look like, and when is it really going to happen?
Let me just talk about the hyperinflation first, if I could. Obama, as usual, is talking through his hat. We've got a situation now where stocks are going up. There's a great euphoria here. People think that they've got a new stock bubble. Gold is going up, oil going up, commodities going up, but the dollar is going down and U.S. Treasury securities are going down. Now, what if that stock market keeps going to Dow 10,000, Dow 15,000, 20,000, 35,000, 50,000? That will be a sign of something called hyperinflation. We've never really had it here. They had it in Germany, for example, in 1923.
So what's going to happen when, as you say, the hyperinflation is going to
happen? That means that you're going to have to take your money to the supermarket in a wheelbarrow and bring home what you bought in your pocket. The Obama administration is pumping $24 trillion of Federal Reserve, FDIC, and Treasury money into the banking system for one purpose only: to bail out the derivatives bubble, derivatives being these toxic securities, junk paper, complex instruments, but they're derivatives. They amount to about $1.5 quadrillion worldwide. So we've got $24 trillion, a large sum,
right,
but really nothing compared to $1,500 trillion, which is the amount that's being attempted to bail out. This will fail, and we've also got at the same time industrial production collapsing. U.S. industrial production, Detroit, the auto industry, is just about gone at this point. We've got whole states collapsing, like California is lapsing into absolute barbarism. So that's a recipe for an explosion.
Okay, now, there are countries all over the world that hold U.S. dollars and treasury bonds. And you seem to think that these countries, like Russia and China, are nervously eyeing each other, seeing who's right, going to bolt for the exit first. What do you mean by that, bolting for the exit, when it comes to this?
You get this huge overhang of dollars, probably $4 trillion, maybe $5 trillion. Nobody really knows. We've got euro dollars. We've got between $1 and $2 trillion in the hands of China. Japan has some. Russia has some. Saudi Arabia seems to have some still. Europe and others. The problem with that is this is inherently unstable. Some kind of a political event, some kind of a completely unforeseen and unrelated event could trigger a panic. In other words, the rush to dump the dollar. What I would recommend, rather than wait around for the panic rush to the exits, I would suggest...
When is a panic going to happen? Give me a time frame here.
It's because it depends on outside events. It depends on things that we can't even predict. It could be a military event. It could be a terrorist event. It could be just about anything. We've had situations where if the U.S. president gets sick, the stock market crashes. Could be anything. But let me point out, if, for example, Russia has several hundred billion dollars of dollar reserves, don't hold on to those as a financial investment. That's a very bad investment. What you ought to think about doing is using them to buy something. Think about buying, for example, 1,000 modern hospitals that the United States could build in Russia to address the problem of public health, longevity, and somehow turn around the falling rate of longevity and the demographic crisis.
Okay, you also said that you think that the dollar's role of the single world currency is over. So are we going to see a new world currency? I mean, what is that going to look like?
I think that's not probably a good idea. If you look at the most recent experiment in this, it's the euro, which has turned out to be very, very oligarchical, deflationary. It's a grim and sinister experiment. What I think we can do is go back to Bretton Woods that we had from 1944 to 1971. That's probably the most successful world monetary system that we've ever had. That means fixed parities, narrow bands of fluctuation among the main currencies: the euro, the yen, the dollar, now joined by the ruble, the renminbi, possibly a Latin American regional currency. Gold settlement. Clearing of balance.
So you're
of
saying back to the gold standard? Is that what you're saying?
The gold standard as it existed under Bretton Woods. But here's what I would suggest. The Russian leaders should address the American people, Medvedev and Putin. Do what Khrushchev and Gorbachev did at various times. Go to the American people over the head of Obama and talk about a common economic interest as well as a common interest in world peace, and think about joint work to try to start world trade again. World trade is now down about 40% just in this year. So what could we do to restart that?
And okay, thank you so much for being here. I got to wrap it up. I wish my guest wasn't so shy today, right? But it's always good to hear alternative points of view when it comes to the economy.
So, you know, I think he has a really good way of breaking down what we're facing as far as the dollar and the destruction of the dollar. He didn't talk about the... you know, being planned so much as what is going on. You know, there's different schools of thought regarding economics, and it's the Austrians like Ron Paul and, you know, F.A. Hayek and, you know, Ludwig von Mises that believe in the gold standard as sound money equals a sound economy. And fiat money, which is money created that isn't backed by anything, it really only benefits the people that create it, which are the banks and the treasury. And, you know, I say it, the banks, because when you have a bank getting a deposit in, say you put in $100,000 in the bank, they don't take that money and loan it out to others. They take that money and hold it in their reserves. And it's actually an accepted practice. They're called fractional reserve banking. They take that $100,000 and turn it 10 times over into $900,000 out of thin air that they create. And 10 to 1 is the accepted practice. And when the collapse happened, you know, like Bank of America, I believe, was at 36 to 1 leverage. So they had $36 of fake money that they created out of thin air out there for every $1 they actually had in reserves. And that's the reason that the banks all collapsed when the housing market went down, because a lot of these things, you know, the houses were tied into these mortgage-backed securities, which were a bunch of mortgages all bundled up into one and sold to, pension funds and, you know, municipalities and things like that. And so since they had been sold all of those securities, when those values went down, that's why you're seeing all these people losing everything in their pension funds, and the municipalities are going broke. And, you know, this is why we're in the mess we're in. It's not just, they like to put it on us that, you know, because a lot of people borrowed a lot of money above their means, that we burden, you know, share some of the burden for this mess. You know, it's easy for them to point fingers. However, the fact of the matter is, I don't care what people borrowed. People wouldn't borrow it if the banks didn't allow them to, for one. And for two, they were leveraging themselves at 30 to 40 to 1. That's a recipe for disaster, because what goes up must come down. And that's really what's going on. They know when they inflate these bubbles that they're going to burst. And it's actually done on purpose. And so this whole situation that we're facing today has been done with a distinct purpose for this same reason: to hijack the economy by building it up, getting us kind of in debt and then crashing it. And then they hold all the chips and they get to buy all the assets up for pennies on the dollar. And what they keep doing is they'll have different bubbles. They'll blow up the bubble and then they'll burst one, but they have another one going on right now. And actually what we're seeing right now is the bailout bubble, in which there is no recovery from the bailout bubble, because this money is being created out of thin air by the Federal Reserve, and there's nothing that we're going to be able to do other than the sweat and blood of our brows and backs in order to pay that back. And it's gotten so bad and so much that no matter how much blood, sweat, and tears we give and how hard we work, we are never, and I mean never, going to be able to pay that money back. And just to touch on what Webster was saying about the hyperinflation, that's why part of the reason you're seeing the stock market going up and up and up. Gold is going up and up and up, commodities, yet the treasuries, the treasury sells and the dollar are continuing to go down. So what he means is, because the dollar is going down and the treasury, the worth of the treasuries are going down, because we've printed so much money out of thin air, the stocks, gold, commodities are elevated as compared to the U.S. dollar, because the more dollars we put out there, the less dollars that are worth individually. And again, he brought it up, $24 trillion has been given to the bank. Our gross domestic product alone in this country is 12. So everything everybody earns, makes, produces in this whole country, times two, has been given to the banks in a year or so. And that's why, I mean, and that's on top of the 60 plus trillion of unfunded mandates for, like I talked about, Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. There's no way. There is just no way. Unless they do something like what Webster was talking about, more wars. That's what they did with World War II. They got us out of, you know, the Depression by going and killing a bunch of people. And you know, or some terrorist event, which is likely going to be a false flag event caused by the government itself. And what he was talking about with Bretton Woods and a fixed amount, you know, a fixed dollar basket of monies, but led by the U.S. dollar, but it was also still backed by gold to a certain degree. We sort of weaned ourselves off the gold standard starting in the 30s, but it's every time you divest or remove a currency from a fixed amount of a commodity such as gold, you are doomed to destroy that currency ultimately. And it's done on purpose for the banks in order to make more money, because you can't print more gold, but you can print more money. And that's, again, that's part of the reason why with the derivatives he was talking about, that states are collapsing because the states invested in all these things. That's the pension funds and all this. And as well as the manufacturing is leaving this country at a crazy pace. And we'll get more into that when we get back. I hope to hear from you. The 1-800-313-9443. I'm taking phone calls all show today. Again, that's 1-800-313-9443. We'll see you in just a minute.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Hey, we're back on the Declare Your Independence show with me, Jet Lacy, filling in for the illustrious Ernest Hancock. We're getting back to the economy here, and hopefully we'll hear from you. We just got a short segment here, 5 minutes, but love to hear from you. 1-800-313-9443, the RBN call-in line. We take all callers, no matter how wacky, how crazy, whatever you want to say. I'd like to talk to you. Crazy like that, I guess. Getting back to the economy, and we're talking about the bubbles and how we're going to try to get out of this situation that we're in. And there's many economists out there that just don't see a way out. And if you really look at the pure mathematics of it, I mean, I'm no economist. I learn all this stuff on my own, and I don't pretend to be an expert on anything. But if you just look at the pure, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 arithmetic of it, there is absolutely no way that we can pay this. We either have to debase our currency, which all this inflation as well, when they print this money out of thin air, it's a hidden tax on you because you're still earning the same amount of money. So this hidden tax of hyperinflation is that you're working the same amount, you're working just as hard with your blood, sweat, and tears, and but yet, when it comes to whatever you can buy with what you earn, you're having a lot less. And in hyperinflation, it'll be a lot less. So that's why inflation is called a hidden tax, because you work the same amount, but yet you get to buy less with the money that you earn. And again, it is complex, but yet it's simple. You know, if the dollar's worth less, things are going to be more expensive. And if the dollar was tied to gold, the dollar would be worth a relatively fixed amount all the time. The reason gold is going up right now is because it takes more dollars to buy the same amount of gold that it did before. And the same as commodities. And I wanted to talk about derivatives for just a minute. And what he was talking about with the 1.5 quadrillion. And I've heard that numerous times, and it kind of cracks me up because there's no such thing as 1.5 quadrillion as far as even in today's dollars anyway. Let them print some more. We'll talk again. But it's 1.5 quadrillion in today's dollars. There's no such thing. You could buy the world, the whole world, like a few times over. I don't know how much it is, but the whole the whole GDP, gross domestic product of the world, is $60 trillion. So, you know, derivatives is 1.5 quadrillion. So that's 1,500 trillion. And 60 is the gross domestic product of the whole world. So you can do the division, the long division. I'm not that good at that, but it's many, many, many times over what the world produces every year. There is no such thing, but yet this is what, in derivatives, the definition of it is a financial instrument whose characteristics and value depend upon the characteristics and value of an underlier, typically a commodity, bond, equity, or currency. Examples of derivatives include futures and options. Advanced investors sometimes purchase or sell derivatives to manage the risk associated with an underlying security, to protect against fluctuations in value, or to profit from periods of inactivity or decline. And what this means is that these are basically insurance policies against different things that you want to buy. And we'll get into that more when we get back here. But we just have a one-minute break. Again, we're taking your calls at 1-800-313-9443 on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show. We'll be right back.